You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The special relationship that is said to exist between Britain and the United States is often cited as a reason Tony Blair agreed to join George W. Bush in going to war in Iraq. And that special relationship is at the heart of a new British comedy called In the Loop that was directed by Armando Iannucci and stars Tom Hollander, Peter Capaldi, Gina McKee, and Chris Addison as the main British characters, with James Gandolfini, David Rasky, and Mimi Kennedy as their U.S. government counterparts. In the Loop opens today at the BAM Rose Theater, the IFC Center, and the Lincoln Plaza, and it brings Armando Iannucci to our show today. Welcome.
Hello.
Although this film is obviously inspired by the lead-up to the war in Iraq, you never mention Iraq.
No, we never mention who the prime minister is. We never name the country they're thinking of invading. Partly because, I mean, I'm not disguising in any way that it's influenced by some of the events that led to the real invasion, but I'm also very keen to put across the thought as you watch it that it could all happen again. You know, the events that you're watching are to do not with, we never go as far as seeing the prime minister or the president. We see all the middle people and watching them. You see.
On the other hand, it feels like you've gotten a lot of the details correct. So you must have researched the build-up to the war.
Well, I came out. I mean, research sounds like it's a very specialized field, but actually, you know, go into any bookstore and any former cabinet person or anyone who was involved in the war, anyone who left under retirement or was sacked for misadventure. Their memoirs are out the following month, so everything has been recorded and annotated. I mean, I'm sure there's a whole lot more.
Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, to come, and I'm sure there are others. We had Alistair Campbell here to talk about his memoir a little while back, and he'll come up in our conversation.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
But the film shifts between Whitehall and White House politics, and the British politicians are awed by the glamour of the U.S. government. They become almost giddy when the Americans express any interest in them. Is that the way it really is?
Yes. I mean, when Tony Blair went out, I mean, his great misfortune, his great tragedy really was he thought he was coming out to help stop an invasion. But his presence in Washington actually made that one thing that he thought he was trying to prevent actually encouraged it. But I think also as they went out, they had a game plan, which they quickly forgot once they arrived in Washington because they were quite excited. They became like children appearing in the Oval Office and being on the sort of the international stage.
And the White House also cited Tony Blair and British intelligence as having all of this stuff. It gave it a lot more credibility
than if
U.S. intelligence had come up with
this. Yes, I mean, Bush cited in his State of the Union address information that he claimed had been passed on from British intelligence, which British intelligence at the time was saying wasn't true and was inaccurate. So he was using the Brits as a sort of seal of approval.
You've said it's not a film about evil, nasty people, but about slightly fragile people occasionally making the wrong decision or not having the courage of their convictions. Mm-hmm. These are people who appear to be in over their heads, and they are the people who are making major decisions about how governments act.
Well, you know, part of my other research was coming out to Washington and meeting people who worked in the State Department and the White House and Pentagon and so on. And I kept saying to them, I don't want to know the scandal. I'm not making a documentary. I'm making a comedy. I want to know, in many ways, I want to know the dull stuff. When do you get in? What time do you go home? And what are the people like you work with? And they threw up all sorts of interesting kind of office politics about the fact that very junior but pushy staffers in their mid-20s would spend a lot of time hanging around outside the offices of Donald Rumsfeld.
But also 22-year-olds would be making major policy decisions.
There was a 23-year-old who was sent out to Baghdad to help draw up the Constitution. You know, he's probably never bought a car before or knows how to mend a plug, but is telling another country how to organize its democracy.
And you make that clear right at the start where a word like unforeseeable obviously it causes an awful lot of trouble.
Well, an awful lot of politics now is all about trying to make sure the media get the right message. And in the film, we have this character, Malcolm Tucker, who's the Prime Minister's Karl Rove figure, as it were, coming down on a minister who says that war is unforeseeable because that implies that the Brits are not in favour of a war. And so this minister has to backtrack publicly and then becomes much more hawkish than he intended. And then when they come out to Washington...
To be a good soldier.
To be a good soldier, to take one for the boss, really. And then when he comes out to Washington, he's the hawks use him as well as the doves. So he finds himself being a hero in both camps.
Although to us, he's a hapless guy.
Well, he's the sort of everyman. It's Tom Holland is playing this minister. And he's us, really. I want the audience, as they're watching it, to think, would I do the same under those circumstances with all those people shouting at me?
Malcolm Tucker, you mentioned, yeah, played by Peter Capaldi, is the guy who worries over words like unforeseeable. He's a scheming, foul-mouthed Scottish spin doctor, and everyone assumes that he's based on Alistair Campbell, who was Tony Blair's spokesperson,
yes,
for many years.
Alistair Campbell watched the film and professed that it wasn't like him at all.
Well, he said he fell asleep.
He said it was boring, which made me think, gosh, has he seen all this before? And then somebody told me about a month later, said actually he loved it, but just didn't want to say. And then I bumped into his wife, who said it's so like him. So him being strategic with his information.
Well, you'd ask him to come and join you and watch the film, and then you and Peter Capaldi didn't show up. Why?
No, what it was, this. I mean, this is, again, was a product of Alistair Campbell's spin. He put this story around. I was invited to come and watch it with him, but I only got the invite the day before, and I couldn't make it. So I said, I really can't make it. So he turned this into a great story of me flouncing out.
Yeah, but he's also very aware of your creation of this character, because you've used it in your TV sitcom called The Thick of It,
yes,
which is very famous in Britain. I guess it's too British to come here. And he's pretty much the same character, the head of the Department for Social Affairs.
Yes, yes, the minister is in that. And we have a new character in this film, and the film really is there. Don't expect the audience coming to the film to have seen or even have heard of The Thick of It. It's a completely new set of characters, apart from Malcolm Tucker, who's this great sort of diabolical, swearing, threatening, shouting figure who drives everything along.
My guest is Armando Iannucci, creator of In the Loop, which opens today at the BAM Rose Theatre, the IFC Center, and the Lincoln Plaza. And we pick up a bit of a Scottish accent in you.
Yes.
Peter Capaldi plays his character with a very thick Scottish accent. And I have to tell you, Armando Iannucci and Peter Capaldi, they do not sound like Scottish names to me.
They are, yes. They are Scottish Italians. We are.
Are there a lot of Scottish Italians?
There are lots of Scottish Italians in Glasgow. We both grew up in Glasgow. In fact, when I started working with Peter, I told my mother, and she said, oh, Peter, I remember him when he was a wee baby. And it turned out that his parents and my parents knew each other.
But you didn't know each other when you were kids?
No.
And yet you've had this wonderful career together.
Yes, so the last, three, 4 years we've been doing the show. But it wasn't... When we wrote the character, I didn't expect him to be Scottish. It was just that when Peter came along to the castings, his performance was so frightening and charismatic that I just thought, that's him, that's Malcolm.
Oh, he's hilarious. Mm. Although this would never be allowed in American television. It has, the movie has been described as The West Wing meets The Office, and some people have talked about it as being an example of a species of humor that they're calling the comedy of embarrassment.
Well, it is, I mean, it's what you were saying earlier, it is all about, you know, you have these big events, but underneath them are ordinary people working in an office, and like you and me, they worry whether they've done something correctly or whether they've made a mistake or whether anyone will find out about it. So it's all about the little paranoias that drive the bigger course of events along, really.
And others have compared it to the Ealing Studio classic comedies because they would do the same sort of thing, the mouse that roared kinds of,
yes,
comedies.
Yes, and also, I mean, I'm the script's very much modeled on a screwball comedy. It's lots of fast-talking, farcical action that gains momentum and doesn't really let up till the end.
People will be surprised by James Gandolfini. How did you come to cast him as the general?
Well, I'd spoken to James about a possible HBO project, and he'd mentioned that he'd seen The Thick of It, and he was a real big fan of the show. And as we were writing this script, this character, General Miller, who's a sort of Pentagon general who talks the talk, but we don't really know until the film progresses whether he can walk the walk. This character came out, and I just sent it to him and said, look, you know, I can see you. It's a funny, slightly pathetic in the end character. And James got back in touch and said, yeah, I love it. I love the script, and let's do it.
Although the script isn't always the final word. I gather you like a certain amount of improvisation, and at times you'll even throw a monkey wrench in to a scene by suggesting a changed line for one of the actors without telling the other actors that you're doing that.
That's right, yes. Because just to keep it feeling fresh and spontaneous and looking very real, I want people watching it feeling I'm not watching a film, I'm watching reality. I'm eavesdropping on something I shouldn't see.
You've shot it in pseudo-documentary style, so it has that kind of caught-on-the-hoof feeling to it. Are you worried that the polls indicate many Americans have lost interest in Iraq, even though we're still there? Except for The Hurt Locker, they largely stay away from movies that even deal with the subject.
Well, I was also aware that that's why I didn't want to make it obsessing with Iraq as such, but keep it as it's an entertainment. It's a comedy which hopefully gives you an insight into how these things happen. But the audiences who have watched it so far have said that they actually felt it was quite therapeutic to suddenly see the last 8 years crystallized in a comic way.
Although there are some jokes that only British audiences will understand. For example, you have a scene in which your minister is watching a documentary about sharks because he's afraid that that if he watches porn, it'll get back to the British public.
That's right.
That's based on a real event that happened with Jackie Smith's husband, Jackie Smith, the Home Secretary.
No, we made that up, and then the event happened. The event happened after the film came out. That's the other thing. We do a lot of research, but we also make things up, and then we find out that the things we make up were actually the things that did happen that nobody told us about.
Steve Coogan also makes a brief appearance because you kind of helped his career.
Yes, I did. Steve has the character Alan Partridge, who's a failed chat show host and a failed radio phone-in presenter, which we created about 15 years ago, really. And his story has taken on many forms over the years. And so it was great to have to work again with Steve on the film.
Just one more thing before you go. You're the son of an Italian pizza factory manager. Mm-hmm. You did your PhD thesis on Milton's religious imagery in Paradise Lost.
Yes.
It's
a standard story, really, isn't it?
You've written an opera about plastic surgery.
Yes. Oh, correct.
And how
Who
do you
am
wind
I?
Up? How do you wind up doing comedies of this sort?
But what else can you do with that? It's not a CV that will get me a job in electronics.
I see, and that's what you really wanted to do.
Yes,
because that's where the money was.
I don't know about that, but I was always a big fan of comedy. Right from the age of about 10 or 11, I was always writing down jokes, stealing other people's ideas.
And in the past, that might have led to something like Beyond the Fringe. Now it would have to be a TV sitcom.
TV. And now the internet is great because people can just produce their own stuff now and just put it up there. And, you know, there are lots of really interesting things. The phenomenon of The Onion is an interesting one, how that has developed solely on the internet.
Well, I think that American audiences will be laughing their heads off. Most of the humor here is quite... It translates quite well for American audiences. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. I've been talking with Armando Iannucci, who is the director and one of the writers of In the Loop, which opens today at the Bam Rose Theater, the IFC Center in Lincoln Plaza. It stars, it's got a lot of actors, but I'm going to mention Tom Hollander, Peter Capaldi, Gina McKee, Chris Addison, James Gandolfini, David Raske, who's just hilarious.
He's good. He's a sort of Rumsfeld figure. Yeah.
And Mimi Kennedy, who is also somebody we will recognize. Yeah. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure.